Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, this is Sarah Morgan, one of the voices you've heard on Still. We hope this story moves you. But more than anything, we pray someone will come forward to help solve these tragic cases. Spread the word by posting about Patricia Otto and the Findlay Creek Jane Doe on social media. You can find links to their advocacy pages in our show notes. It's not too late to help these women. The truth is out there. And please take a moment to rate and review us on your favorite podcast app, which helps more people learn about these cases. If you'd like to leave us direct feedback, contact us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, or send an email to info@thereportersnotebook.com. And please, if you know something, come forward. Now, get ready for the next episode of Still.
This podcast contains intense subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
At the end of the last episode, we learned that Ralph Otto had paid a hitman to kill police captain Dwayne Ayler, one of the detectives investigating Ralph for Patty Otto's disappearance. Ralph reportedly believed Ayler was also having an affair with Patty. The man Ralph paid to kill the police captain turned out to be an undercover agent for the Idaho State Police. Ralph had believed that the proprietor of Lewiston's Long Branch Saloon was connected to the mafia and would know a hitman or two. Ralph approached him about hiring someone to have Ayler rubbed out, but the proprietor called Lewiston police to report the incident. Lewiston cops then contacted state police, who set up a sting operation. This is Ralph's friend, Ron Rohde.
It was just a bad deal the whole time. You know, the cops harassed him so bad that they drove him to, they kind of framed him on that contract that he put out on Ayler.
Ralph was recorded offering to pay the undercover cop, Stephen Watts, who described the encounter in an autobiography he wrote years later. He said Ralph was one of the most foul-mouthed individuals he had ever met. He said he dropped F-bombs every third word during their initial meeting, all the while declaring that he was being unfairly harassed by police for his wife's disappearance. Watts' impression was that Ralph had definitely killed Patty, even though he never actually admitted it during their taped conversation. Ralph was also secretly recorded as he followed the instructions for paying the fake hitman, placing the envelope of cash inside a cup in a truck parked outside the Long Branch Saloon. Ralph told Watts that he would take his daughters, Natalie and Dallas, to Disneyland while the hit was carried out to give himself an alibi. On October 27th, the day after making a payment to the undercover cop, Ralph called his friend, Bonnie Shopbell, and said that he was planning to take his daughters out of town. Lewiston police arrested him that afternoon on a charge of attempted murder. It was Natalie's fifth birthday. She and Dallas now had one parent missing and the other in jail. From the pages of the Reporter's Notebook. This is Still, Season 2. I'm your host, Gary Anderson. Ralph's sister-in-law, Dodie, shared with us a manuscript she wrote about the ordeal her family went through during this time. She titled the nearly 200-page document, Victims of Human Cruelty. In it, she wrote, Ralph did tell Ray he knows a guy that would waste a person for about $500. The cash Ralph gave the cop posing as a hitman was a $250 down payment. He promised to pay another $750 once Ayler was dead. Even after he previously admitted that he wanted to kill Randy Benton, the musician who had gone out with Patty while she and Ralph were separated, and with proof in hand that Ralph also tried to have a police captain killed, Dodie swore that Ralph was just a fall guy when it came to Patty's disappearance. She and Ray hired a private investigator and placed ads in a money saver circular in a quest to find Patty alive and prove Ralph's innocence.
Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Hang down your head and cry.
If you recall from the last episode, we told you that the day after Patty disappeared, Ralph had started telling his friends and family that he no longer wanted Patty to come home. He said he changed the locks on his house and the car she left sitting in the driveway.
Stabbed her with my knife.
His behavior, though, told another story. Here's retired detective Tom Saleen talking about a conversation he had with Ralph on September 7th, 6 days after Patty vanished.
In our interrogation of him, he was obviously extremely distraught, not like a guy that would have a wife that run off on him. It was like a guy that had done something with her. And then he made comments like, I'm so low, I feel like I'm a snake crawling around on the ground. And then, but he just wouldn't tell us. And that's the problem with, the whole business of working cases in the American society, we want to protect people's rights and not force them to talk or not coerce them in any way. And doing that, and once they attorney up, you better have the evidence to support your conclusions.
Patty's sister Alice told us that when Patty left Ralph in 1975, he seemed to have trouble accepting the end of their marriage. She said he did everything he could to convince Patty to return to him.
Staying married to Rob like she did, she kept thinking she took her marriage very serious. It was her place to help him. And then I think when she finally got, wise to leave, I wish she'd never went back, and she knew when she went back to him it was wrong. But that he'd went to that rehab place and they told her it was her place as his wife to go back and help him.
Mm.
And I think within a week she knew it was wrong, that it wasn't going to work out. He's not going to change unless he wants to change. Because she actually finally got a place to live. She got a job. And I know he kept coming around. But It wasn't long enough.
So you said he kept coming around. He wanted her back, do you think?
Oh, yes. He wanted her back. That was the thing. He didn't leave her alone.
In early October of 76, after his wife's disappearance, and before he tried to hire a hitman and landed in jail on a charge of attempted murder, Ralph again made a point of telling Ray that he didn't want Patty back and that he had changed the locks on the house. He stopped Ray as he was leaving Ralph's house one day and gave him what he said was a new key to the house so Ray could get inside if he needed to. On October 30th, after Ralph was arrested, Ray's wife Dodie and the private investigator, Jack Prim, used that key to go into Ralph's house and search for evidence to prove that Patty had planned her disappearance. Dodie went into a bedroom closet, reached into the pocket of Ralph's suit jacket, and found Patty's wedding rings tucked inside. Convinced that someone had planted the rings in Ralph's pocket to make him look guilty, Dodie gave them to Jack Prim, who then gave them to Ralph's lawyer, Jim Givens. The lawyer sealed them in an envelope, which he stashed in his desk drawer. This is Karen asking Tom Selene about Patty's wedding rings.
First of all, I had read in some of the reports that Ralph claimed that Patty threw her rings at him during the fight and that she took her purse with her when she left. Do you recall when he first said to police or told people that about the rings? Was it after the rings were found or before the rings were found?
After the rings were found.
He never mentioned it until after.
No, and we never found those rings either. They were in the closet in his coat pocket, as I recall.
Right.
And then a family member found them, then made the inquiry.
Dodie wrote in her manuscript that on October 31st, she went back to Ralph's house and saw pieces of ferns on the living room floor that appeared to have been tracked inside by someone who had walked through a wooded area. Then, on November 1st, when the private investigator's wife drove by Ralph's house, she saw someone inside. She said the lights were on, and she saw a figure move behind the curtains. The back of the auto's home was illuminated by tall poles at Sunset Park, which was down a steep embankment from the home's back patio. Mrs. Prim rushed to Ray and Dodie's house to tell them what she saw. In a flurry, Dodie, Ray, and the Prims all drove back to Ralph's house to look the property over again. When they arrived, they found a key under a doormat. It was an old key, but it still worked to open the front door. That's when they realized that Ralph had lied about changing the locks. They also found the ignition key to the station wagon under a floor mat inside the car. It still worked, too. Despite Ralph's lies, Dodie told us she and Ray still believed Ralph was being set up by someone.
All of this stuff ties together. You guys have some work to do, seriously. So, I could say, I do believe that Dwayne Ealer, arch detective, and most of us are sugar daddy. And I graduated with Dwayne. And I know his record. I think that we broke up a mafia ring in this city. You know, because they were just wanted to shut us down so bad. They everywhere we went, there was cops on our tail. They told my husband, who worked for the guard, that he better watch out what he's doing because it meant his job. That didn't stop us.
Inside Ralph's house in November 1976, Dodie said it appeared that some of the furniture was askew and a candle had been moved. Dodie also told us an empty cigarette package was on the ground and a key for a Portland, Oregon hotel room was found on the floor of the basement next to a chest-style freezer. She swears the key wasn't there when she and the private investigator searched the house before. For the second time that day, Ralph's family called police to the house to take a report. Dodie wrote in her notes, quote, "Ralph had told us Patty had been very interested in a 60 Minutes television program titled How to Change One's Identity." Dodie gave us a cigarette package she said was just like the one she found on the floor of Ralph's house. She said the one she gave us was found later by Jack Prim in her front yard. She believes they were left by the same person. She said a police officer kept the mysterious hotel key as evidence. Selene didn't mention a hotel key in his report. He noted, however, that the locks to the house and car did not appear to have been changed, as Ralph had claimed. I want to point out here that a lot of the information we have learned about this case came from copies of police reports we've obtained. But current Lewiston police officials have not talked to us on the record about Patty's case.
I want DNA proof that this is Patty. I want her case closed.
How can I help you?
I have my mom's sister and my uncle with me, a cousin, and then I have a cold case reporter with me.
Okay. We can't meet with any of those folks.
I can't have my mom's sister.
In the summer of 2021, we sat in on a meeting with Patty's family and two Lewiston police officers, but police didn't permit us to record the meeting.
I guess I'm the only one in charge of detectives today. Captain's also out. Now, is one of you in the media?
I am.
Okay, so this is not a media interview. I don't have the permission to do that, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Literally, the chief is on vacation and both of our captains are out, and now the sergeant's out, so I don't have permission to do that.
Okay.
I would be fine with it.
We followed up with multiple emails and phone calls, but a police spokesman has yet to respond. There is some interesting background that could explain why the department was hesitant to talk about this case in particular. We'll get to that thread in a later episode. Now, back to what was happening at Ralph's place in early November 1976. Ray and Doty began hunkering down there and writing down license plate numbers of every unfamiliar car that drove by. Their stakeout, which they documented in extreme detail, went on for days. During that time, Doty said people were repeatedly calling Ralph's house and either hanging up or asking for someone who didn't live there. Ray and Doty also started fielding responses to an ad they placed in the local Money Saver, seeking information about Patty's whereabouts. Then, it seemed like police got a break in the case on November 2nd when they were alerted that a check written to Patty by her sister had been cashed at a Portland, Oregon bank, more than 300 miles from Lewiston. Police noted that the check was processed after Patty's last known sighting, but there's no record of who actually cashed the check. Their hope of a valuable lead simply evaporated. Around this same time, Doty and Ray went to a pawn shop and purchased a pistol for protection. Doty said they had started receiving threats to stop their search for Patty. She said Jack Prim, the private investigator, told her that Patty had gotten involved in organized crime.
It blows your mind to think the people you trust, you know, and look forward to helping you out, and they're doing all this stuff. It's just unbelievable. It's like, I don't believe anything's happening. Yeah. I think some of them are involved with the mafia ring. Yeah. It was, I think we had attorneys and cops and everything around here. Yeah. And we just kind of broke it up. Nobody's around here anymore. They're all moved. They're gone. Except for Thomas Lane. And I think he knows something myself. I really do.
By this point in November 1976, Lewiston Police Captain Dwayne Ayler had stepped back from any involvement in the Patty Otto investigation, as law enforcement and prosecutors mounted their case against Ralph for hiring a hitman to kill Ayler. But evidence against Ralph for Patty's murder was sketchy at best, and Ralph's closest allies were remaining tight-lipped if they knew anything that would incriminate him. It's not directly related to this case, but it's worth mentioning that on November 7th, a woman came forward to Lewiston police to say that Ralph had raped her in 1970. The woman said he was, quote, all the while laughing like a crazy person. The woman knew Ralph because her brother was married to Marcy Otto, Ralph's sister. She told police she had previously told Ralph's mother about the rape, and Mrs. Otto reportedly attributed the assault to Ralph's jealousy of his brother-in-law, A few weeks after that woman told police about the rape, Celine contacted Ralph's first wife, Joy, to learn more about his history of domestic abuse. In previous interviews with police, Ralph had admitted that he had no qualms about hitting a woman and had once knocked Joy unconscious during a fight. When Celine called her, Joy said she only remembered Ralph hitting her once, and she characterized it in milder terms than Ralph himself used to describe the incident. Patty's family said they had never seen Ralph hit Patty, but they had seen bruises on her face and neck that Patty said had been inflicted by Ralph. Bonnie Shotbell, the woman Ralph was spending time with in the days surrounding Patty's disappearance, told us that Ralph was uncomfortably pushy and seemed to believe their relationship was more serious than she did. She also told us that when he drank too much, he talked crazy. We think she's specifically referring to a conversation she and Ralph had in December of 1976. He called Bonnie late one night and started rambling with alarming details about the night Patty vanished.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
On November 17th, Ralph was released from jail while awaiting trial for the attempted murder of Duane Ayler. His family had sworn to a judge that they would forfeit their houses if Ralph didn't show up for trial. The property bond totaled $150,000. While he was out on bond, Ralph bought Bonnie and her five children plane tickets so they could fly back from California to visit their family and friends for the Christmas holiday. On December 28th, Ralph went over to have dinner with Bonnie's parents, Helen and Wayne Bartlett. They lived in Assotin, Washington, across the river from Lewiston. During dinner, Ralph appeared physically ill and said he needed to go home. As he was leaving, he complained that he was having a problem with his truck. He said some kind of wire was stuck in the wheels. Puzzled, Bonnie's dad looked the truck over and saw no trace of the wire Ralph was describing. It seemed to Wayne that Ralph was hallucinating. Ralph then climbed into his truck and drove home. Later that evening, while Bonnie was at her cousin's house, Ralph called there to talk with her. Celine called Bonnie later to ask what Ralph had told her that night. This is a portion of his report about what Bonnie told him.
Shotbell indicated that in a normal or what appeared to be a normal sounding voice from Ralph, he made the remark that Patty's body had been found. Shotbell inquired as to where, and Ralph indicated that it was found between the shop and the house. Shotbell advised that she considered this hallucinations. Shotbell advised that Ralph made the remark that Patty had come after him with a gun, so he stabbed her. Shotbell indicated that Ralph had also spoken with Shirley Tushoff and had told her to be sure to get Bonnie out of town or else they would hang both he and Bonnie. I inquired from Bonnie if she had been at Ralph's house, and she advised she had, and that she knew perfectly well that Ralph was bothered with something. She advised he talked about Patty's disappearance, but had not said anything concerning her whereabouts until the telephone conversation on the evening of December 28th.
After her late-night conversation with Ralph, Bonnie called his brother Ray to tell him what Ralph had told her. Ray asked her to keep quiet about it. That same night, Ray went and got Ralph and drove him to a mental hospital in Orofino, Idaho, about an hour east of Lewiston. Here's Tom Celine.
Well, let's just put it this way. My opinion was that Ralph had killed her either in a premeditated and with a forethought or in a heat of rage. We don't know. All we know is that, in my opinion, he had killed her and then had, with by himself or with assistance, had disposed of her remains. And he never gave us any information. But we do know that he, at times, had hallucinations and his brother took him out of town. We believe so he wouldn't have access or we would not have access to him.
When Celine interviewed Bonnie, he asked her about the nature of her relationship with Ralph. She indicated that it had been years since they had been intimate, although she did spend the night with Ralph on December 17th, the day she arrived in town for the holidays. Bonnie also said that Ralph had been very generous to her. Over the years, he had given her approximately $3,000 in cash. That last Christmas, while he was out on bond, he had lavished her whole family, including her parents, with expensive gifts. He also started telling Natalie in Dallas that Bonnie was their new mom. Bonnie said she made it clear to him that she was not going to step into that role. She said that after Ralph rambled on the phone that night about killing Patty, he asked Bonnie to call his lawyer. Here's more from Celine's report.
Bonnie Shopbell did make the remark that Ralph said that Patty's not never coming back. I asked Bonnie if Ralph had made any remarks concerning what had been done with Patty, and Bonnie indicated she could only speculate that Patty would have been taken to the ranch of Ralph's in Weipe. I asked Bonnie how she could speculate this, and she advised that several years ago when she was going with Ralph that they had been on the ranch in the Weipe area where there are numerous stumps pulled from the soil. Ralph made the remark at this time that if he was ever going to get rid of anyone, he would bury them in one of these holes.
Weipe is a small town in Clearwater County, Idaho, about 70 miles east of Lewiston. Ralph lived there for a few years as a child before his family moved to Lewiston. As an adult, he reportedly bought or inherited some acreage from relatives.
He was an old-time cowboy, don't you understand?
Ralph kept a herd of cattle on the land for a while, and he sometimes took women to the property to show it off. It fit well with the cowboy image Ralph tried to cultivate. He often wore Western clothes and cowboy boots.
I knew I had to ask him about the mysteries of life. He spit between his boots and he replied, it's faster horses, younger women, older whiskey, more money.
The property was only a mile or so from where a petite but feisty woman lived. We'll refer to this woman as Eve, but that's not her real name. Eve was married and had kids at home. This is her ex-husband talking.
Well, at that time, she was going out on me while I was working and things and screwing around with other men. And she got tangled up with Mr. Ralph. And all I know is they had some real time together while I was working in one thing or another, and of course the last child that was born in my home was her name is Patty, and it ain't my child, it's his. So many things went on then that but she was having awful close get-togethers with that guy at that time, and it just happened to be the same time that Ralph Otto's wife come up missing.
We don't have any proof that Eve's youngest child was fathered by Ralph. In fact, we've learned that a recent DNA test indicates that he wasn't her father.
Well, they was having get-togethers. I was working night shifts, and she had half the night to mess around with. I'd I'd come home 11 o'clock at night from work, and there was still cigarette smoke in the house and everything, and of course he was gone then, you know. But yeah, like I said, I do know that they was having an affair. I'm sure of that. They was having an affair, but at that time, like I said, the same time that Ralph's wife disappeared.
We could brush this off as mere speculation again. But in October of 1978, a prosecutor from Clearwater County contacted Lewiston police. Clearwater officials had executed a search warrant on Eve's house and discovered a diary with notes about Eve's relationship with Ralph Otto and a stack of letters exchanged between the lovers. Police were searching the property after Eve and her husband had had a serious disagreement there months earlier. During the argument, Eve went into the house and fetched a gun and shot her husband between the eyes. We're not naming him or using her real name to protect her ex-husband's identity.
Do you think she was trying to kill you?
Well, I think so. They dug one or two more bullets out of the side of the door casing there.
Oh, my goodness.
She fired more than once.
The bullet that struck the man went through the bridge of his nose, pierced his left eye, and lodged in his skull. Eve was charged with assault with a deadly weapon. Eve's grandson had heard stories about his grandmother's past. But as he visited her on her property throughout his childhood, he chalked those stories up to tall tales.
Over the years growing up, I mean, it was always kind of like a family thing that my grandma had a dark history, a dark side to her, period. That, you know, she could do bad things and everything. I thought it was all made up to scare us grandkids for messing around at grandma's house. So I thought none of it was real all those years. Everything that we'd heard I always thought it was just so we would behave while we were at grandma's. I got older and kind of dug into stuff and started adding things together, I was like, this is actually a real thing. Like these situations that my grandma herself used to kind of joke about and play along with were actually real live events. And I think it's sick now that I've learned that everything was true, that those things I thought was fake were real. It's just really sickening to know that she stood there and joked about it with children.
What I need to fill you in on here is that in early summer 1977, Ralph did go to trial for the attempted murder of Lewiston Police Captain Dwayne Ayler. He was convicted by a jury and sentenced to 10 years in state prison. As police continued searching for Patty, Ralph's lawyer filed an appeal. Exactly a year to the day after Patty vanished, Ralph was released on bond, pending the outcome of the appeal. His first day home, Ralph went on a bender and remained drunk for months. Meanwhile, Dodie continued documenting Ralph's behavior and her own personal crises. She wrote that on New Year's Day of 1978, Ralph threatened to kill her if she ever used anything he told her against him. Then she said he attempted to seduce her. On January 3rd, Dodie wrote, quote, "He was trying to get me to submit to him sexually so I would look bad and raise eyes. I let Ralph know that if I found one piece of evidence he killed Patty, the mother of his children, I would turn him in. He is crazy, and boy, does he need help." Worried that Ralph's drinking and erratic behavior was going to do something to jeopardize the property bond they put up for him, his family tried to convince him to seek alcohol treatment. On March 29th, Ray took his brother to a detox center in Washington, and started discussing arrangements to take him to another facility for intensive treatment. While the family was planning their next move, Ralph crawled out the window of the detox facility and hiked home. On April 2nd, Ray and Ralph flew to Seattle to check Ralph into another treatment center. His stay there lasted less than 2 weeks. On April 13th, he walked out the front door of the facility. He called his family from a cousin's house and said the treatment wasn't working out. A few days later, he got a ride to a Seattle airport, saying he was going home to Lewiston. But he didn't arrive back in Idaho. The Otto family was now in full panic. Later, they learned that while Ralph was AWOL, he met up with Eve, and the two may have taken a trip to Las Vegas. Then, without explanation, Ralph returned home on April 22nd. The next day, he was arrested for DWI. His family didn't bail him out this time, and Ralph was sent back to state prison in Boise. It was about 3 months after Ralph went back to jail that Eve shot her husband in the face. Another detail you need to know is that Ralph owned a camper which was fitted onto the back of a heavy-duty Ford pickup. Throughout most of the 70s, it was parked outside Ralph and Patty's home on 29th Street. Doty believes Patty hid inside the camper after she and Ralph fought that night and then walked away from home after the sun rose the next morning. Doty believes that while Patty was walking around town, someone picked her up. Sometime after Patty's disappearance, Ralph parked the camper at an RV storage lot owned by Ray and Doty. Then, before Ralph went back to jail in 1978, Ralph gave the camper and another vehicle to Eve. To this day, the camper still sits on Eve's property in Weipe. Her grandson described it to us.
Yeah, it's like a 1958 to 1961, somewhere in there. It's got four headlights. It's got two headlights on each side. It's like a reddish orange color, and the camper part of it is white with like a red or orange design on the side. The RV part that's on it is actually an old camper put onto a pickup frame, so it's completely homemade.
So
my grandma's always had a serious attachment to that thing. She won't sell it. She won't give it to nobody. I mean, when I started hunting when I was a young teen, I asked my grandma to give it to me. That's how I heard Ralph's name. And she always told me, absolutely not. Absolutely not. That thing, that's mine, you know. She was just always weird with it. Just weird.
When Eve's grandson first heard her mention Ralph, he didn't know who Ralph Otto was, or that his wife had disappeared.
I remember bringing up Ralph's name, but I didn't know that they were like partners or boyfriend, girlfriend, or anything. Because when I was a kid, you know, especially in my teens, I was into vehicles and cars and all kinds of stuff. So I used to ask her about the motorhome and blah, blah, and she just mentioned Ralph, that that's who she got it from.
He told us that his mother, Eve's second oldest child, remembers playing with Dallas and Natalie when they were babies.
My grandma used to, because Ralph had property right down the road from my grandma. My grandma used to watch the two girls, Dallas and Natalie, babysit them and whatnot. And they actually stayed there for an entire summer once with my grandma. Ralph would come and go. He would help them on the farm. She would go over there and help him. You know, just back and forth. Supposedly they were just friends. Well, my mom said that as a younger girl, she remembers going down to Lewiston and with and stopping by Ralph's house. And then Ralph and would go in the back bedroom for X amount of time while my mom was sitting there on the floor playing with Dallas and Natalie as they were babies. And then she'd remember grandma coming back out.
Ralph was a busy man. Next time on Still.
And my mom just looked at me and she said, I know where she is. And what are you talking about? Well, she told me, she said, you swear you will never say a word to anybody about this until after we're dead.
anyone with information pertaining to the disappearance of Patricia Otto should contact the Lewiston Police Department's tip line at 208-298-3939. Anyone with information pertaining to the identity of the Findlay Creek Jane Doe or other information related to that case should contact the Union County District Attorney at da@union-county.org. If you or anyone you know is a victim of domestic abuse, please contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-SAFE. Still is a production of The Reporter's Notebook and Grace and Shaw Media. You can connect with us online at thereportersnotebook.com or via email at info@thereportersnotebook.com. Still was researched, written, and produced by Karen Shaw Anderson. Additional research and script editing provided by Christine Hughes. Original music by Smith Uoso. Additional narration provided by BJ Blackburn. I'm your host and associate producer, Gary Anderson. Special thanks to everyone who graciously provided interviews and helped with our research. We would specifically like to thank the Advocates for Patricia Otto and the Findlay Creek Jane Doe Task Force. Like, follow, and subscribe to Still on your favorite podcast platform. And follow us on Facebook or Twitter to join the conversation. Ezekiel 34:16. I will seek the lost, and I will bring back the strayed, and I will bind up the injured, and I will strengthen the weak.